movie maker, and he's made a movie. This is the third movie he's made about 9/11, and it's a film that you can't see, but the rest of the world's going to see tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? I think it is tomorrow.
It's being seen in most of Northern Europe, in all of the Middle East.
Oh, it's already been seen.
Tonight it's being seen.
Mm-hmm.
Canada, Brazil, Mexico, all of the Muslim countries,
yeah.
Israel, they've all bought it, and they're going.
But you must be quite wealthy now. Is he paying you all right, David, or not?
Oh, we're not financially connected.
Oh, I see. Right, okay.
And I think the money will maybe come once the third edition of the movie is released theatrically, which comes out in January.
Okay, why haven't we been able to see it in this country?
Because mainstream media don't feel that it's a subject that's appropriate for British people, the taxpayers, and the licence fee payers of this country.
Well, forget the licence fee payers, because the licence fee, everybody has to pay the licence fee, apparently, to watch television in this country, and the only people who benefit are the BBC, so I don't know, that's got nothing to do with it. So, what is so terrible in this movie that Britain isn't allowing its population to see it?
The allegation is that the Twin Towers were brought down not by the 19 hijackers. In fact, the allegation is that these towers could not have come down by the impact of planes hitting them and fire alone. That the Pentagon...
These are not new allegations. These are allegations that a lot of people have made. And now it seems to be in some quarters perceived wisdom that maybe there had to be bombs placed in the towers as well.
Well, this is a forensic examination of the story right from 1962.
Yeah, but the why, we have conspiracy theorists coming on TV and radio all the time. I mean, why have they stopped your movie?
It's not that they've stopped it. They haven't allowed it. I think that's possibly the way it's...
Oh, I see. They haven't allowed it. Why haven't they allowed it? I mean, there have been conspiracy theory movies on about 9/11. Why hasn't yours been?
Well, I mean, five do in fact want to run it and are trying to find ways that they can run it, not run...
Well, just stick it on. I mean, what is it? Does it say anything you could be prosecuted for?
I don't think it does, but their lawyers are having a very good look at it to make sure that they're not in any way culpable. But they do want to run it, and they're going to find a way to do it.
Has it been seen in America?
No, it has not been seen in America, and this is why we've chosen to distribute it.
Has it been seen in Europe?
It is being seen all over Northern Europe tonight.
Okay. What station?
Stations. Let's start. TV2 Norway, TV4 Sweden.
All right, okay, I get the idea. So it's everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, but not here.
But not here.
But if you went across the channel in Calais, you could see it.
You could watch it. You could watch it if you couldn't get across the channel.
Well, there must be something in it that's upsetting somebody. Why? I mean, I haven't seen it. I don't know. I mean, is it badly made? Why didn't ITV1 want to show something like this, or Channel 4?
Channel 4 ought to want to see it, but there is this idea that movies made by two 22-year-olds on their home computer aren't of sufficient provenance.
Mm. Is that how it was made?
It was made for $10,000.
Yeah.
On a home computer.
But you're not 22.
Unfortunately, no longer. But I found it on the internet, and I thought, no, this is a very interesting film. People need to know about it. I checked out the evidence that was put forward, and in checking out the evidence, I came across David Ray Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And David is from the opposite end of the spectrum. He's arguably the most educated 9/11 academic, and they're both saying very, very similar things, which makes me think that maybe there's an awful lot of truth in what the two of them are saying.
Now, David, that brings us on to your book, Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11. Now, are you a theologian?
I'm a philosopher of religion and theologian.
Okay, fine. So you're coming at this from a completely different perspective.
Well, not entirely.
You're not into the New World Order and all the sort of that this was really the one of these secret societies wanting to try and provoke the Third World War for their own ends.
No, I don't think the American government is a secret society.
So, well, no, I'm sure the American government isn't a secret society, or, but part of it could be, some people say, and that's what happened. What do you think happened?
Well, I don't know. I don't, you know, people will call us conspiracy theorists, but I, for myself, don't have a theory about what happened on 9/11, except for a few big issues, but in terms of details. But mainly what we do in the 9/11 Truth Movement is reject the official conspiracy theory. Mm. You know, they use that term, conspiracy theory, to apply to us, forgetting the fact, and so assuming they can discredit us because we don't believe in conspiracy theories. But a conspiracy is just when two or three people conspire in secret to do something illegal. And the original conspiracy theory was Osama bin Laden and 19 Arab Muslims conspired to defeat the world's most sophisticated defense system in history, and to bring down three buildings by crashing airplanes into two of them, and also to hit the Pentagon, which must be the world's most well-defended place. So this is quite a conspiracy theory.
Mm. Well, okay. Do you think that talk? I mean, a lot of people complain about me non-stop, and I really couldn't give a stuff one way or the other. But there will be people who've had friends and relatives who were killed during this, who may feel that this sort of discussion is not warranted on the anniversary of 9/11. Do you worry about that or not?
I don't, because when the truth comes out, they will be upset, not with us, but with the true perpetrators of this crime, and they will be outraged that somehow they weren't let in on the truth earlier, so that all these years they've been blaming Arab Muslims.
There is no doubt, is there, that the people that they've accused that died, who hijacked the aeroplane, actually aeroplanes flew them into those buildings.
There is doubt about every aspect of the official theory. You know, George Bush said shortly after 9/11, beware of outrageous conspiracy theories.
Hmm.
Well, part of my job as philosopher of religion is also a philosophy of science. And in philosophy of science, you distinguish between good theories and bad theories. A good theory is one that fits all the facts. A bad theory is one that's contradicted by some of the facts. So therefore, an outrageous theory would be one that's contradicted by all the facts. And that's the situation with the official conspiracy theory. So let's take the hijackers.
Mm-hmm.
We have no solid evidence that any of those gentlemen were on those flights. For example, if you look at the flight manifests that have been released, no Arab names.
Well, they wouldn't be. I mean, I presume they
bought tickets.
They bought tickets.
They bought tickets, according to the official story. They were regular passengers, so their names should be on the flight manifest.
But they weren't.
They're not on the flight manifest that the airlines have released.
Could they not have used different names? Wouldn't they have been?
That has never been claimed by the official theory. They have not explained why their names are not on the flight manifest.
You must have asked people this question. What is... officials, this question, what has been their response?
There's no response. When we write to them, they just repeat the fact that we have released the flight manifest, and that's all there is to it.
Let's be very obvious about it, and let me ask you this. I mean, I saw with my own eyes on television aeroplanes hit the Twin Towers.
Surely.
Did I see that?
I think you did.
Right.
I saw it. But that doesn't mean... there were Arab Muslims piloting those planes.
Mm.
We've been able to pilot planes by automatic means for a long time. So that's what I say. I don't have a theory about what really happened, but I have a very strong set of reasons for rejecting the official account. Well, let's take Osama bin Laden. That's at the very center of the official conspiracy theory, that it was inspired by Osama. And yet, if you go on the FBI's website for its most wanted criminals, you'll find Osama bin Laden is wanted for various bombings, but there is no mention of 9/11. And so a fellow in America with a website called the Muckraker Report, named Ted Haas, called up the FBI and asked the official spokesperson for this, why not? And he said the reason Osama bin Laden is not mentioned for 9/11 is that we have no hard evidence that he was involved in 9/11.
Right. Okay. Let's unravel then a little more of what went on. They do talk about there not having been any evidence of a plane hitting the Pentagon. And when you look at the films, and when you look at there doesn't seem to be any bits of an aeroplane left.
We need to distinguish between whether a plane of some sort hit and whether a Boeing 757, particularly Flight 77, and under the control of Hani Hanjour. So that's the official account. And I say there's no question about the falsity of that, that Hani Hanjour flew Flight 77 into the Pentagon. And so one aspect of that is, yes, there does not seem to be either the debris or the kind of damage that you would expect from a 757 hitting the Pentagon.
If it was ever discovered that, for instance, your theory is right and the official story was complete bunkum and rubbish, what do you think the response from the public would be?
Oh, I think it would be outrage. Now, the American people have...
Would people take to the streets? Would they demonstrate?
I don't know. I'm not a sociologist. I'm a philosopher of religion and science. The American people have proven terribly tolerant. We know because of the Downing Street memos that our government decided in advance to fix the intelligence around the policy with regard to Iraq, so that it was established that it was manipulated. It was not faulty intelligence. It was distorted, faked, fabricated intelligence.
Well, we go further than that in this country. We would say, at least I would say anyway, that we were actually lied to. I was champing at the bit for us to go to war because I thought that Iraq was going to wipe us off the face of the earth within 45 minutes, as people like me were actually encouraged to believe that.
That's right, you know.
And I'm annoyed about that.
A couple decades ago, you know, the commies were going to be on the beaches of Santa Monica, and now it's first it was the Iraqis, and now pretty soon it's going to be the Iranians. They keep doing this over and over and over, and we keep falling for it. But my point was going to be that American people have proven tolerant for a whole host of things we should not have proven tolerant for, but they would not stand still for 9/11 being an inside job that we killed our own citizens and used that to launch an illegal, immoral war. That would definitely put an end to this administration. And more importantly, it might, and I think it would, and that's what I argue in the new book, Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11, which is largely about American imperialism, that it would make Americans wake up and say, if this is what we're doing in the name of empire, we want to quit doing this.
Are you able to say these things in America?
So far, I haven't been able to say them on mainstream television more than once. I had 5 minutes once.
And what happened afterwards?
Nothing.
You didn't get invited back again.
The host, who happened to be Tucker Carlson, referred to me as sinful and blasphemous. I realized he had confused Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld with the Holy Trinity. But aside from that, he behaved fairly well.
So, okay. There's no doubt that some fairly eminent people in America now are beginning to agree that there must have been bombs planted in the World Trade Centers to bring them down the way they did. But then there's nothing to say that they weren't Arab terrorists who planted those bombs.
Well, in the new book, the first half is strictly evidence. The second part is about imperialism and Christian faith. In the first part, I have two chapters devoted entirely to this. One chapter devoted entirely to testimonies about explosions going off in the buildings. And these were released. These were firefighters and emergency medical workers shortly after 9/11 were asked to tell their history of what, the oral history of what happened that day. Dozens of them reported hearing one, two, seven, eight explosions going off. Some were in the buildings and felt or bounced down the stairs. There is no doubt about that explosions were going off. And then the question, as you rightly say, is, well, do we know who could put them in there? Al-Qaeda terrorists, it's very implausible to think they could have got in there for the dozens or hundreds of hours it would have taken. We don't know how long it takes these days to do this sort of thing, but these were very big buildings. There was a lot of steel to be sliced. You had almost 300 steel columns in each tower, and 110 stories. They would have to be sliced many different places. They came down in pieces about 50 feet long or shorter. So that's a lot of explosives. How could have Al-Qaeda terrorists got in there? But if someone says, well, how could someone from inside have gotten in? There are so many things our press has not informed us of, and one very interesting little bit of information is that the company in charge of security for the World Trade Center was called Securicom. One of the principals of that company was a man named Marvin Bush, who just happens to be the president's brother, one of his brothers. And the CEO was Wirt Walker III, who was their cousin. So we do have a plausible answer to the question, how could have homegrown terrorists got inside to plant the explosives?
All right. If you're just joining us, Dr. David Gray Griffin is my guest on the program. He's a renowned theologian from America, and he claims that the Bush administration was behind the 9/11 attacks. And his new book called Christian Faith, and he says the truth behind 9/11 is out at the moment. Tim Spark is with us as well. Tim is a film producer, and he has brought to the world a film that we're not going to be able to see, actually, in this country at the moment. It's being shown practically everywhere else except America, and it's here.
It's even being shown on a Rupert Murdoch station in Australia, which I find incredible.
We'd show it here if we had a TV channel, but we don't. It's rather interesting, and I'm amazed, and I don't believe that, you know, our TV people are a bit poncy. They do go into this sort of, it might not be made well, and they would do that, I'm sure. But I'm sure one of the news channels would show part of it.
Certainly, there has been a lot of interest in the film, and we are going to release a third edition of this film in cinemas, and the Sundance Film Festival, which is America's premier international documentary festival, wants to headline next January. Okay. Now, what the film shows, for example, we've got the evidence of the firefighters talking about the explosions. Okay. We've got physical evidence of the bombed out lobby of the North Tower. We all know what explosions look like these days because we've seen them every day on our television screens. And we've got footage of the lobby of the North Tower. It's clearly a bomb has gone off. You can see shards of glass. You can see that something has gone on. We've got testimony from people talking about the explosions that they felt at the bottom of the building.
You'd have felt something like that if a plane flew into it.
You'd feel it. We're talking about explosions before. We're talking about explosions afterwards. We're talking about a whole range of explosions. We've also, let's talk about the Pentagon plane here. Mm. We've got CNN's chief Pentagon correspondent talking live 20 minutes after whatever it was that hit the Pentagon, saying, I'm looking now at the evidence, and I cannot see any remnants of any kind of a plane. Now, why would the CNN's chief Pentagon correspondent lie to the American people 20 minutes after? Why would he make up such a story?
I presume what David said as well is that the Pentagon is well guarded. I mean, I can't believe that anybody could get any kind of plane, missile, anything within miles.
The Pentagon is the most defended building in the world. Now, any foreign body that goes anywhere near the Pentagon that doesn't have a friendly transponder gets shot down. That's it. Now, if we look at the trajectory of the flight that hit, or whatever it was that hit the Pentagon, the smartest thing to do if you're going to try and destroy the Pentagon was just land the plane, bang, on the center of it. That would have destroyed much more. But instead, the only place that was hit was the part that was being was under reconstruction. So most of the people that died were construction workers and a few lower-ranking army officials. But, you know, Rumsfeld and his cadre weren't hit, even though it would have been much easier to have dropped the plane either in the centre of the Pentagon or actually taken, instead of turning it in a 270-degree turn and dropping 7,000 feet, just carrying it on in the straight, in the same trajectory that it was going, and landing it into the Pentagon.
Okay, we're going to take a break. If you want to join us, maybe you've got a question for the guys as well. 08704 20 20 20. You can email us at talksport.net, or you can send an email. No, I said an email, didn't I? You can send a text.
Okay, welcome back. Tonight, the 9/11 special. Everybody, of course, has been commemorating that fateful day 5 years ago now. And, of course, we woke up to the stories live being beamed into our living rooms and homes of aeroplanes flying into buildings in New York City. The result was, of course, over 3,000 people were killed. Since that happened, I think probably near a half, maybe more, million people have probably lost their lives because of it. And are we any safer? And do we really know what happened? There are many conspiracy theories. You just have to go on the web and find them. There are many views being expressed all over the place, yet none of our politicians have actually agreed to talk about them, have actually been prepared to discuss them. They seem to hide behind this this wish to do nothing continually, both in America and in this country. With me in the studio, Dr. David Ray Griffin and Tim Spark. We'll talk to Tim in a bit. Dr. David Ray Griffin is a theologian. He's written a book called Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11. He's researched this. The book has, he says, evidence that it was not Muslim terrorists that blew these buildings up. You believe it was the Bush administration that did it. Why?
Why would they do it?
Why?
They had very powerful motives. When you look at any disputed crime, you always ask means, motive, opportunity. And so one part of making this argument is to show that the Bush administration and its Pentagon, and only they, had the means and the opportunity to carry that out. And that pretty much solves the question, did they do it? But still, you must argue, they also had a motive. It's going to make it plausible.
Yeah, you're absolutely convinced that this is what happened.
Yes, when I...
I mean, you're putting your professional stance on the line here, aren't you, really? I mean, you're a respected
that's right.
Scientist.
At the end of 2003, I published my first book on this, which was called The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11. And when I wrote that book, I was tentative. And I said, there is a strong prima facie case for the guilt of the Bush administration, but left the door open for the possibility that all the questions that I had summarized in there that previous researchers had really come up with, I just pretty much wrote them down, summarized them, made it clear. I left the door open for the 9/11 Commission to respond to these and say, you know, there's really a good answer for these 40-some questions you've raised. And then when the 9/11 Commission came out, their report in 2004, I saw that of all these questions that we had raised, they simply ignored almost all of them, and a few where they thought they could answer them by distorting them, they did it. So at the end of that book, I declared then that I really was convinced, because I said, why would this commission have told so many and so many outrageous lies unless they were covering up very high crimes? And another factor here that many people don't know, because the mainstream press has not emphasized it, is that Philip Zelikow really ran that commission. He's the executive director. So it's not Thomas Kane and Lee Hamilton, the guys you see on TV. Philip Zelikow decided what would go in the report, what wouldn't, what would be researched, what would be ignored. Philip Zelikow is essentially a member of the Bush administration. I could go through, you know, he and Condi Rice had been on the earlier Bush National Security Council together. They had written a book together. She brought him on. So they called
not tried, have they not tried to silence you in some way?
Not yet. It does seem like they're now trying to rebut us much more fiercely than they had before. For a long time, they were simply using the standard method of ignoring us and thinking the public won't pay attention or we'd go away and give up. But now polls have shown that 42% of the American people now believe that there has been a cover-up of the truth, and only 48% are confident there has not been a cover-up. So they don't have 50% of the people believing them.
Are you able to work in America still or not?
Still, so far?
Yeah?
Yeah.
You work in university?
I'm retired now.
Yeah?
I work at home.
Have you seen any kind of, since you've written your books and since you've come out with your theories, have people stopped ringing you that used to? Have you got less invitations to dinner than you used to have?
Oh, to the contrary. I'm perceived as much more interesting than I used to be.
Okay, right. Now, why would George Bush want to be behind this? Well, tell me about the Christian, then we're going to take some phone calls. Tell me about the Christian faith angle of this. I mean, I have to put my cards on the table. I loathe religion. All kinds of religion. Muslims, Christians, I hate religion. Well, that's just the kind of guy I am.
One reason what I argue here, among other things, is first of all, there are a set of basic values that all the major religions have in common, whether you're a Buddhist, a Hindu, very basic things like you don't kill people, you don't murder, you don't bear false witness against your neighbor in order to steal his oil, for example. Hmm. That's one of the commandments, if you've read those. We all agree on those. But beyond that, and the reason in this book I appeal particularly to Christians, is that Christianity began as an anti-imperial religion. Now, that has not been the mainline view down through the ages, but recently, scholars of the historical Jesus have seen that Jesus' message was an anti-imperial gospel. And that makes sense. They were occupied for a long time by the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire did very nasty things, as all empires do, but it was very nasty. And you read the last book of the New Testament, you know, for all of its apocalyptic mythology, what it's basically saying is the Roman Empire is the embodiment of the demonic. And I do use the, and then I ask in my book, is there a non-mythological way of understanding demonic power? Because with the Enlightenment in the 18th century, liberal Christians gave up this view of a literal Satan, but then they gave up the view that there was some demonic power altogether, and we got overly optimistic. And, you know, if you look at what's gone on in the last century, here we are heading like lemons towards the sea to self-destruction. We haven't gotten rid of nuclear weapons that could create a nuclear winter. We have known about global warming now for many years, about 35 years, and we have done essentially nothing about it. It seems like we are in the thrall of something that makes us act irrationally. And so I suggest in this book a way to understand history since the rise of civilization and how human power has gotten to the point where it is demonic. It can be demonic, and by that I mean it's diametrically opposed to the power that created us and wants life to thrive and be abundant. And now we're strong enough to defeat that power that created our universe. We're able to bring the life of our planet to a very premature end, and that's demonic. And I see 9/11 as one of the chief embodiments thus far of demonic power.
You mean, so when I've spoken to people about conspiracy theories on these issues before, they've spoken about the New World Order, they've spoken about the total power Do you believe that this is all behind it? Do you believe that the politicians are... For instance, OK, let's say Bush is behind it, right? Let's say he was the man who knew what was going on.
Surely not. Switch over. If you say Cheney, then I can nod. Bush surely was not the way.
Okay.
Cheney had been Secretary of Defense. Cheney knew his way around Washington. Cheney, in 1992, Dick Cheney, as the outgoing Secretary of Defense, had Wolfowitz and Libby write a document known as Defense Planning Guidance that was the most belligerent document ever written and that saw the light of day. And this has been called Cheney's plan to dominate the world.
So do you think Bush is just a sort of a rather dim bystander who's easily... I mean, a bit like our own Prime Minister, some may say, who seems to be led by the you know, who had... Our Prime Minister is so stupid that he went to the Lebanon today, stands up to make a speech, then looks a bit sheepish when this poor woman... runs on with an anti-Israeli and an anti-British protest, and here's this man who didn't do anything to try and stop the slaughter of innocent people, which he could perhaps have said, right, let's have a cease to this now. Didn't do a thing. He has the gall to go over there and stand in Beirut and say, well, you know, we feel your pain. I wonder whether these people are as bright as everybody says they are. I don't think they are. I think they're dim and I think they're stupid.
You asked me about Bush. I don't have a theory about Bush. He's an enigma.
But he's very Christian, I hear.
Well, it depends on your definition. If you mean, does he embody and act upon in his public policy the basic values of Christianity? Absolutely not. His values, the... what he's pushing with the increasing the gap between the rich and the poor is diametrically opposed to everything Jesus was talking about and the prophets before him. With regard to 9/11, it surely was planned several years in advance, and long before it was known that Bush was going to be president. So within the 9/11 movement, people differ on whether they think Bush knew or in advance, or whether he was brought in on the plan at the last minute or even after the last minute. You know, you see these pictures of him at the schoolroom. He looks genuinely dumbfounded, very puzzled. So it's we don't know. So as I say, I don't have a theory about this.
Let's go to another way then. David, what do you think the people who organized this, whoever they may be, in your view, what did they want to happen? Has what they wanted to happen after 9/11 actually transpired?
Everything except the cakewalk in Iraq. But I lay out in my chapter called Imperial Motives Behind 9/11 that these neocons, when the Soviet Union imploded, they said, hey, no longer a bipolar world. We've got a unipolar world, and that's good as long as we're the uni. And that's actually the language they used. And they said, let's keep it that way. So our task is to prevent any rival from ever growing up, you know, such as China, the United States of Europe, or anybody. And they had a five-point plan in which this would be carried out. So they needed first a huge increase in the military spending, and they've got over $500 billion added so far. They wanted a new doctrine of preemptive warfare, when we can attack anybody we want to if we think they might be a danger to us 5 or 10 years down the road. They got that. That's called the Bush Doctrine. They wanted, of course, to go into Iraq. They've been chomping at the bit for that since 1991.
Have they been shocked when they got in? I mean, did they expect Iraq to be all subdued and living the way they wanted them to? They weren't that naive, surely.
I don't know what they thought. I think they did think it would be easier than it was. So I think they are really, really puzzled.
Tim wants to say something.
I spent some time filming in the Pentagon after 9/11, and I got to know some of the Pentagon officials, and a guy called Sam Gardner Colonel Sam Gardner, and he was one of 13 people who was assigned to the reconstruction of Iraq after the invasion.
Mm.
And the fact that it was only 13 people tells its own story, and there really was this sense that actually this is all about just taking over Iraq, and nobody really thought further than...
They didn't think that the different factions that, that people like Saddam Hussein have had to keep.
I don't know how true this is, but apparently when George Bush was told there is a difference between Shias and Sunni Muslims, he acted with incredulity because he thought that all Muslims were the same.
Well, I suppose that could be said of all of us who don't know much about religion, if you like, and Muslims we thought were Muslims, and Christians we thought were Christians, and then you find they're all subdivided into different sects and different, you know, the whole thing's balmy as far as I'm concerned.
But, you know,
I'd make religion illegal in my world when I take over. There will be no religion, except worshipping of me. That will be compulsory. But,
if you were going to invade Northern Ireland, you'd probably make sure that you boned up on the religious divide within the community, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I hope you would. I hope you would. But then nothing the Americans do now, with present company accepted, of course, David, surprises me. You know, the fact that most Americans don't even know where Iraq is. If you ask them to point to it on a map, they wouldn't be able to.
One of the things that came out of my Pentagon work was the sense of groupthink. Now, 80% of the people in the Pentagon all vote Republican. So there's very little room for people to think in a different way, because there is any one way to think. So when they come across a problem, they don't know actually how to deal with it. And that's what we've seen in Iraq.
Mm. Well, if David's book was ever taken literally, and if anybody actually could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that David's theory or any other theory like this was actually right, what on earth would the people in power, in opposition, in the military, in the police, what would they do in America? I mean, how would they react?
We don't know that, but let me go back to your if sentence. To go back to the towers, which is the big thing that Tim and I have together, because in common, because the other chapter in the most important chapter in my book in terms of evidence is a long chapter on the collapse of the World Trade Center and why the official story cannot be true. And that's the strongest point in Loose Change, is the evidence on this. And we're really talking about scientific evidence here. These things are, you know, I have taught epistemology, and there you have to be very careful about what we know, how strongly we can make claims. But we can make very strong claims about the falsity of the official theory, because it says these buildings came down because they were hit by planes, two of them. Remember, Building 7, they don't want to talk about that, because it was not hit by a plane, and it came down too. Secondly, the fire then. And the fire is the big thing, because even people who support the official theory said the impact of the airplanes was trivial. The latest report by National Institute of Standards and Technology, they say the planes, all they really did was knock some of the fireproofing off the steel and expose it. So it's a fire theory. Well, first of all, fire has never in the history of our universe brought down a steel frame high-rise building. And there's good reason for that. Fire, and pardon me, I'm American, so I talk Fahrenheit. Fire can only, an open flame hydrocarbon fire like that, and jet fuel is just kerosene, it's nothing fancy. At the most, it could get up to 1,700 degrees. And these fires were really, could not have been over 1,300 degrees, and really not even that hot. Steel does not begin to melt until 2,800 degrees. It does not begin to significantly weaken until you get way over 2,000 degrees. So that's one big factor. And furthermore, we've had fires in Philadelphia in 1991 that burned 18 hours. And these really were raging infernos. 18 hours and no collapse. Caracas, 17 hours and no collapse. Building number 2, the South Tower, how long did it burn? 56 minutes, and they're going to tell us the fire brought the building down. It's absolutely absurd from a scientific point of view.
Could it not have been that the building was in some way compromised, that perhaps the structure was not properly done, or maybe something like that?
In theory, that's possible, but in fact, that's not the case. And these were extremely well-built buildings. There was a fire in one of the towers back in 1975. Mm. It didn't cause any collapse. And furthermore, if, you know, people keep saying, well, the planes hit them. Remember Building 7, 47 stories, had fires, in terms of the photographs we've got, on three floors out of 47, and they're going to tell us the fire caused a total collapse of the building that hadn't been hit. And furthermore, and this is the other big point,
why would they need that small building to come down?
Well, that's another question, which I don't have a theory about. But the point I want to stress is that all three collapses had at least 10 characteristics of the kind of controlled demolition we call implosion.
Okay, we're going to talk more about this in a moment. We've got loads of calls. We're going to take some calls when we come back after the news. Thank you, guys, for the moment. If you want to get your views on, call me now, 08704-2020-20, Tim Spark and Dr. David Ray Griffin. And the alternative view to what really happened on 9/11 when we come back after the news.
Watch it, send it back.
Choose another one.
Watch it, send it back.
Choose another one.
Very good evening to you. Welcome to the James Whale Show across the nation, across Europe, across the world on the web. You know Tony Blair is still in power. I haven't taken power yet, but I don't think it's going to be long. Tonight, on the anniversary of the tragedy of 9/11, we're talking to Tim Spark, who's a filmmaker, who is promoting a movie that's being seen everywhere in the world about 9/11. It's called Loose Change. It's not being seen here yet, and it's not being seen in America, and we'll talk more about that a little later. Also, Dr. David Ray Griffin, who has written a book called Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11. And your chance now to get your views in. And Dr. David Ray Griffin, who is a theologian, and also, what else is it you are?
Well, philosopher of religion.
Philosopher of religion, that's right. Philosopher of religion. You reckon that the Christian faith has driven whoever did this, whatever people did this, to do this, because they...
Oh, no, I didn't. You don't argue that, no.
No.
Sort of the opposite of Christian faith.
Oh, okay. So, but you don't believe it was Muslim extremists,
right?
But you think it is people possibly possessed of the devil, yeah, or whatever.
And we don't know. Say with the alleged hijackers, we don't know whether they played some sort of willing complicit role or not. So it's possible. You know, Muhammad Atta was evidently sent $100,000. It would look like some sort of payoff for his role. That would be one way to interpret it. But that maybe his role was simply to be a patsy, to fly, you know, to drive up to Portland, Maine the night before 9/11 and stay overnight and then take a commuter flight back down from Portland, which would have been a very stupid thing to do. Commuter flights can be late. Mm. He could have missed the flight. And so it looked like it was set up for him to leave his bag there so they could find the bag, which would incriminate all the alleged hijackers. But one very strange thing about this is the bag also had his will in it. If you were going to fly an airplane into the World Trade Center, would you take your will on the plane with you?
No, probably not. No, I think I'd left it at home. Tim.
James, how do we know that it was 19 hijackers? The reason that we know is because the government told us. Now, what was the first thing that we found out? We found out at 1:01 on the Wednesday morning, the Solicitor General of the United States rang or sent an email to CNN saying that his wife had called him and told him that Arabs armed with box cutters had taken over, I think it was Flight 11. Now, first of all, it was supposed to be a cell phone call, and I don't know whether you've ever tried to make a cell phone call from a plane, but And until now, until Ryanair just introduced it, you can't do it. So that's the first thing. But secondly,
we thought lots of people were ringing home from the aeroplane, actually making ringing home saying, "I'm in a bit of trouble, dear, and this is what's going on."
That's the story. The problem is, as Tim says, in 2001, the technology to make cell phone calls from high up in the air did not exist. This technology was not created until 2004, and only this year is becoming operational. So all of those alleged phone calls could not have occurred at heights over over 2,000 feet. You cannot make reliable.
We do feet, actually, David, in this country. I know.
Sorry.
It comes as a shock to a lot of you Americans that we are not yet taken over by the rest of Europe.
Sorry. So, you could get in a cell phone call, perhaps, between 2,000 and 8,000 feet, but it'd be iffy.
Yeah, because we had a pilot call us once from this program, from a private plane, but that would probably have been within 10,000 feet.
Flight 93, which was the real cell phone flight, because you had all those alleged cell phones, it was flying evidently over 30,000 feet, so these cell phone calls would have been completely impossible. So when you get rid of Otta's bag, and you get rid of these cell phone calls, and if the cell phone calls were fabricated, surely the airphone calls were too, you have no evidence that these hijackers were on the planes.
Is America going to invade Iran?
I don't know. I talk about 9/11. I don't know the future. I remember philosopher, religion, theologian, not prophet.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do some emails and take some calls. If you want to join us, 08704. 2020 email first. James, I'm afraid there's one piece of evidence, or to be more accurate, lack of it, that destroys your theory. Surely it would have been simple to have planted WMD in Iraq when none were found. I'm no fan of Blair or Bush, but they didn't do it. The Twin Towers collapsed because they were not designed to withstand that kind of damage and heat. That's Fred, who's a cab driver. He says you're talking bull.
Well, Fred, I'm sorry what you're saying. You know, we've got physicists, we've got mechanical engineers as part of the 9/11 Truth Movement, and what you're saying about the towers is absolutely wrong. Now, what you're saying about weapons of mass destruction, that is an interesting question, and there are interesting stories about that. I don't know what the truth is, but there is one story that they were planning to plant some, and the plot got foiled, but I won't go into that because that says nothing about what we're talking about, which is 9/11. You know, the argument to morph 9/11, which had no Iraqis involved, into an excuse to attack Iraq, that's another story which I do tell in my book, but it wasn't difficult. Once we had in our mind that Arab Muslims attacked us, we're pretty undiscriminating, and many Americans just wanted to go out and get revenge against somebody.
How do people in America feel, David, generally? I mean, okay, the tragedy was over 3,000 people died in the Twin Towers. After the invasion of Iraq, something like 100,000 innocent people who had nothing to do with anything but just happened to live in Iraq were killed by Bush's shock and awe, which is a rather appalling thing I always thought from somebody purported to be a religious person anyway. How do the American people sit with that, or don't they care?
Well, you have some who do and some who don't very much, frankly. And but the ones who do say, absolutely, this is right. And also now more American soldiers have been killed in Iraq than where Americans were killed on 9/11. So when people say, and this is one of the big a priori, you know, people really don't want to look at the evidence because it's so powerful and it's frightening to people. So they give a priori arguments. Oh, they wouldn't do this. And they say, do you really believe Cheney and Rumsfeld would have killed 3,000? Well, you know, frankly, these people are very careless about human life. So 100,000 Iraqis really means nothing to them. And frankly, 3,000 American soldiers don't mean much to them either. We know they sacrificed 3,000 Americans for a war that they fabricated the reason for, why wouldn't we think they would kill 3,000 Americans?
You see, what I need now, David, is I need Bush and I need Blair to come back and irrefutably prove that you're an idiot. For my own sanity, I now want my government, or the American government, who've heard you, you're an eminent gentleman. There are other people within the 9/11 truth movement as well. I have yet to hear any of our politicians. I mean, obviously, I don't want to give you any credibility. That's why. But because you are continually saying things like this, because books continually come out like this, because of Tim's movie, I want to hear Bush and Blair saying and proving that what you say is a load of rubbish.
And they won't. And unfortunately, nobody will debate us. This same Ed Haas that I mentioned, and you can look at this on Google, on Muckraker Report, he tried to organize a national debate, and he got seven of us from the 9/11 Truth Movement to agree to a particular date. And then he asked members of the 9/11 Commission, the scientists from NIST, and any member of the administration to come and debate. He didn't get one single person. And he called up this National Institute of Science and Technology and said, look, we've got these scientists like Stephen Jones and Jim Hoffman and others who are saying, your report doesn't make any sense. It's scientifically unsound. So this is confusing Americans. So why don't we have a public debate, and we can just settle this. You can demolish their arguments. And this Michael Newman, the spokesman for NIST, said no NIST scientist will participate in any public debate.
Apparently over here, this is according to Doreen. Thanks for your email, Doreen. She said, apparently there was a documentary made explaining the faults by the architect who built the Twin Towers, explaining the faults in the design as to why they collapsed. Were you aware of that?
There were lots of TV specials that were full of nonsense. One of them said that the fire melted the steel. That's absolute rubbish. There are all these claims about the faulty architecture that simply are false. So they get them on TV, and you get millions of people who believe them, and then they call into talk shows and cite those as if they were definitive.
Okay, right. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with Shane, going to be our first caller. Shane, hold yourself ready. We'll talk to you right after this. So David Ray Griffin, we're talking about 9/11 conspiracy theories. Of course, everybody's talking about it today. Gaunty was talking about it this morning. I bet he'll be talking about it tomorrow morning as well. Dr. David Ray Griffin, though, has written a book called Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11. Tim Spark is promoting his movie called Loose Change, which apparently, according to Graham in Bradford, is available on DVD in shops. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Oh, right.
Yes,
well, he's selling it. Of course he knew that, yeah.
It's available on the internet. It's available on shops. You'll find it in about 50 different languages. And if you go across the border to any of our European neighbours, you'll find it on the television stations.
Right. Okay, now, you and David want to throw out a challenge to the listeners tonight. We should have got Paddy Power in on this, Ash. Listen, all right, maybe give Paddy a ring. And you would like to encourage people to go along to their local bookies and see what odds they would get on whether or not the major conspiracy theory about Muslim terrorists causing the 9/11 disaster will be disproved within the next 3 years. Is that the right way of putting it, do you think? Does it make it
fairly
easy?
Yeah, the best way.
Yeah. See what odds you get on it, because Tim doesn't think you'll get very good odds.
My sense is that if they haven't investigated it, you could make yourselves an awful lot of money, because it will be proven in 3 years' time that...
Well, you don't know that, Tim. Well, you hope it'll be proven in three years. You think it'll be proven in 3 years.
We suspect that...
5 years it hasn't been?
We suspect the evidence is getting so... is mounting, and the...
Yeah, but if the powers in charge at the moment won't allow the evidence to be heard, there's nothing you can do about it.
But something radically new has happened in just the last few weeks in America, anyway.
What?
the mainstream press has finally started to report on this. So, for example, over 2 years ago, there was a Zogby poll taken that showed that 49% of the residents of New York City believed that the government had advanced knowledge of the attacks and consciously allowed them to happen. No mainstream newspaper would report that poll. Now, we've had two new polls, the one that I mentioned, about 42% think there's a cover-up. Another poll, 36% believe the government was complicit, either by organizing or at least consciously allowing. And that poll has been spread, you know, most Americans now have heard about that poll. Mm. This is radically new. Time magazine came out with a big story about 9/11. They cited a lot of the evidence from Loose Change and did not rebut it. Their only rebuttal was, well, certain people need conspiracy theories, so they believe these things. The Washington Post, 2 days ago, came out with a major story that talked about my work and the work of other people. This is a radical change. So this means millions of people are being exposed to this. And once they do, it's all over because the evidence is so overwhelming.
What would you expect to happen if this... So go along to the bookies tomorrow and see what odds they'll give you on whether or not 9/11 were the reasons behind 9/11 will be changed within the next 3 years. If it is, if your theory is proved right, where does that leave the American government, the politicians in there at the moment? If they actually, it could be proved they knew something, what would happen to them?
Yeah, well, I'm doing a lecture tour now, and in this, I title my lecture 9/11: Should the Truth Be Revealed or Concealed? And many people hearing that title would think, well, that's obvious. Of course it ought to be revealed. But, you know, if you're among the elite members of a society, it might not be so obvious because you would say, look, this could cause catastrophe. The global economy is already on a very unstable ground, and this could cause a kind of global economic meltdown. I argue, yes, that the consequences will be dire, most likely. The only thing worse would be not revealing the truth about 9/11.
And that could happen. So people might actually find out and prove, but it may not be made public knowledge, so we would never know.
Well, what we're talking about with the bet is that it would be publicly acknowledged that the official story is false. Publicly acknowledged.
Now, I mean, there are some interesting things going on at the moment. Four pages in Vanity Fair were written about Loose Change last month. That's incredible for Vanity Fair to do four pages on a documentary made by a couple of 22-year-olds. The BBC sent a film crew out, headed by Ed Sturton, you know, the Today presenter, to go and give David a grilling yesterday on the Heaven and Earth show. And guess what? They said, show us the evidence. We want the evidence. Tomorrow...
Did he give you a grilling?
It was actually a very, 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 very good interview.
Yeah. And did you show the evidence? Did you?
I spoke about as much as I could in about 7 minutes. Yes. Yeah.
And do you think it'll be heavily edited?
Oh, it's already appeared.
It went out.
It appeared. It was very good.
Yeah. Tomorrow, David's been invited into the BBC studios by BBC News. The mainstream media have a big problem because either they are on the side of the government or they're on the side of the people. I mean, and at a certain point, you know, as we've seen last week, Tony Blair's in a little bit of trouble. Well, we're seeing all of a sudden the rats are fleeing the sinking ship. Nobody wants to be associated with him. I mean, even in Israel today, nobody wanted to know him.
Before long, David Cameron will be asking to meet you.
Now, let's David Cameron made a speech today.
Yeah.
What did he say? I am not a neoconservative. He distanced himself completely from the Bush administration. Why is he doing that? Because he knows if he says he's best buddy with George Bush, he is not going to get elected.
Well, at the moment, I'm afraid it seems to me that David Cameron is saying anything he thinks will get him elected, and that's what worries me. Anyway, I've been saying we're going to take loads of calls, and I've been prattling on, so you'll excuse me if we take some calls. Shane! Sorry to keep you waiting. Shane, you're on the air through to David Griffin and Tim Spark.
Hi there. Good evening, James, and guests. Yeah, I'd like to make a couple of points about...
Let's get to it then, Shane. What's your first one?
Okay, it's about the Twin Towers mainly. One interesting thing, 6 weeks after the actual event, I was actually speaking with somebody in a chat room. And bear in mind, this is 6 weeks after the event. He actually told me that he'd watched the CNN footage of Flight 175 at normal speed, slow motion, and frame by frame. And he mentioned that just before impact, he noticed there was a flash from the front of the aircraft. I mean, for me, that was a bit frustrating because I didn't have the footage.
Hmm. What's the point, Shane? Let's get to it because I'm going to run out of time.
Well, with what we're talking about here is that it's been quite accepted that missiles were actually attached to the underneath of these...
Well, it hasn't been accepted at all, Shane, but some people on the net think that there may have been. What do you think, guys?
Well, this is one of the things that's quite controversial in the movement, and my own focus is simply on the falsity of the official theory, and we have so much evidence for this that we don't need this very controversial theory. It's not something that I've particularly looked into.
It's not helpful, do you don't think?
It's not necessary, and many of us really want to focus on those things that are so absolutely clear they're not controversial within the movement. And, you know, this may be true, and if it's true, that adds one more nail in the coffin, but it has served as a distraction. And what we want to focus on is the fact that these buildings came down at free fall speed. They came down straight down, vertically down. That means all 200 and some columns had to be sliced simultaneously. This evidence is so powerful, we don't need additional controversial evidence about the flashes.
Okay, Shane, thanks for that. Ripon is in London. Hi, Ripon.
Hello.
Yeah.
I would like to make a few points. I would like to know what your guests say about this, because one of the charges against your theory is that it's completely unfeasible, the massive cover-up that would be necessary, the thousands, possibly tens of thousands of people that would need to be involved. Also,
Let them answer that one first.
Okay.
This is one of the two major a priori arguments against it. And again, people don't want to look at the evidence. They want to say, oh, this couldn't happen because of this and that. And they say it couldn't be such a big cover-up. Well, first of all, in operations of this sort, you have a small core group who are involved in all the details. None of them are going to talk because this would be, in America, the gas chamber. There are also people who've been proven to be able to keep their mouths shut. You're going to have a next ring around who realize maybe after the fact what they were involved in. But they're all government employees for the most part, and they have to take orders. They can be prosecuted or worse if they disobey orders to keep their mouths shut. Also, many people say, well, you know, governments can never keep secrets. Well, that's just not true. There have been large, very large operations that have been kept secret as long as they had to be secret. The Manhattan Project had many thousands of people involved. We started a war in Indonesia in 1957 that killed 40,000 Indonesians. To this day, hardly anybody knows about that. And by definition, if there were lots of other operations that nobody's talked about, we don't know about those. So instead of worrying about these a priori objections, just look at the evidence and you see it did happen. This is the only way you can account for it. When you look at all the facts, it's a very powerful cumulative argument against the official theory. Every part of it falls apart upon examination.
Okay, and another quick point. What about the suggestion that the administration is quite happy not to quash such conspiracy theories because it keeps anti-imperialist campaigners conveniently distracted from issues that really do bother them?
I've never heard that one, and I don't know what they think, but that would be rather strange, because the 9/11 movement is an anti-imperial movement. That is basically what we argue when the question comes to motive. My first book was called New Pearl Harbor, and this was one of the big things they said. In order to get this massive transformation of the military that we want, that they said that's probably going to go very slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. And what about the credibility of your so-called experts? I mean, you've mentioned one physicist, Stephen Jones, and one engineer, but there needs to be a spectrum of such people, and other people will cite other experts. So how is Joe Public like me meant to make sense of this? Because it's, you can draw upon your experts.
All right, let's get the answer, Rippon.
Let me give you a possible answer. Will you watch Loose Change 2? Watch it. It's an hour and a half.
I've just ordered it on eBay.
Fantastic. Watch it and then decide. Make your own mind up. Go and do the research yourself.
Hang on. He makes a very good point, though, because what he's saying is, you know, your side can bring experts, the other side can bring experts, and will do, and pay them a lot of money. How will we, who have no idea, actually know the truth? Because there are many, many conspiracy theories about 9/11, as there are about all sorts of things.
Well, of course, there are really just two basic theories, either that the government's theory is correct, or else the government is responsible. So you can really narrow it down to those. With regard to this, that's absolutely right. A few decades ago, we had scientists who were swearing that cigarettes would not cause cancer. You can get scientists who will say almost anything. But, you know, use your common sense. Look at the NIST report and see what they do. All they do is describe what they say. We get it to the point where the buildings are poised for collapse. That means they can ignore all of these features that we focus on, the straight down nature of the collapse, the free fall speed, the fact that almost all of the concrete in the buildings and everything else was pulverized into very tiny dust particles, the fact that you have explosions going out from the top of the towers at the beginning with steel columns being pushed out 400 or 500 feet. They ignore all of that. So wouldn't that make you rather suspicious?
Yes,
that they don't know. And furthermore, they've never yet even issued their report on Building 7, since their theory is the towers collapsed because the planes knocked the fireproofing off the steel. No plane hit Building 7, so they can't use that theory. They don't have an explanation for Building 7, and so they don't publish it till the next election.
Okay, fair enough. Very quickly, Intellectual Speak Out, Volume 1. Obviously, that's a book I'm interested in, but one of the charges against you is that you're just into selling books and making money. Why is it Volume 1? Why can't you just... why can't you just give us one thing to buy?
Well, the volume 2 is not by me. It's another volume called 9/11 and American Empire, Christians, Jews, and Muslims Speak Out, which is co-edited by a Muslim, a Jew, and a Christian. So they're very different volumes, and the one focuses on intellectuals. The other is to say that Jews and Christians and Muslims are united for 9/11 truth.
But the interesting thing is, I had Alex Jones on the show the other night. I'm sure you're aware of Alex Jones. And he gives his movie for nothing. He makes it available, the movies he's done and all the interviews he's done, he makes it available free. Would you not have more credibility if you did that?
Well, first of all, Loose Change is available free on the internet. Anybody who is connected with any of the victims have been, families have been sent free DVDs. The reason that we put it up on the internet was because we thought it was so important that people should get to see it. And it was only then, once 20 million people had seen it on the internet, that television stations wanted to acquire it. Now, what we made sure that we did before we sold it is we only sold it for, quote, reasonable license fees. We didn't allow bidding war stations to bid against each other. We decided, right, no, we were just going to accept the license fee for it. Now, every penny that has been made off the sale of Loose Change 2, all that money is going in to buying film footage to prove our point for Loose Change 3, which will be...
Okay.
So, you know, if we wanted to make money out of if we want to make money out of television, there are many more exciting subjects to do that make money.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Ripon, thanks very much indeed for that. Good questions. We'll take more of your questions if you want to join us. 08704 20 20 20. Sam on the M25. Okay, Sam, we're going to come and talk to you right after this.
Be a bookie, be a banker, be a broker, be a trader, be a cash collector, be a cost controller, be a piggy bank embracer. Be a wonga
when Christian faith was behind 9/11, as I understand it. Basically, though, if it wasn't for religion, this probably wouldn't have happened. We probably would all be living fairly harmoniously together, wouldn't we?
No. Religion is one of the, you know, it's the best and it's the worst. It can bring out the best in us, it can bring out the worst in us. But the motives transcend these things. The motives, you know, religion can be used to divide and to motivate, but the motives here are basic human motives of greed and lust for power, the political and the economic motives. And religion gets used, unfortunately, to bolster those, but it's not the basic cause.
Okay. Sam, who's on the M25. Hi, Sam.
Good evening, James, and present guests. Riveting as usual, James.
Sam, you're on. What's your point?
One of your guests, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch his name because I just finished work and stuff and popped in the car and whatnot.
Okay.
He was saying he's not a prophet.
Oh, you're talking about David? Yes, he's no, David. He's not a prophet, are you, David?
Right.
No.
What was he, sorry, he said?
I can't remember. What did he say?
I'm a philosopher of religion, yeah. And a theologian.
A theologian, right. Basically, my question, aimed at yourself, is that, because you're this, do you actually specialise, I mean, do you know about metals, the way they bend and stuff? I mean, I can't say much myself, because I'm only a chef, yeah?
Yeah.
But do you actually know yourself
Sam, before you make a complete pillock of yourself... I do wish you'd listen to the program and not ring in and say, I apologise, I've only just started listening tonight. Then you would know, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't got time to explain it to you, Sam, all right? Clive in London, you're on the air. Hi, sorry about this.
Yeah, I did, that's okay.
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Go on, Clive.
Yeah, I've got three quick points, but I just want to know that I've got this right. Your guests say that the neocons were possessed and whatever, but are they really saying that They killed over 2,500 Americans and other foreigners, including 60 British people, when the same people, Cheney was there, Rumsfeld were there, could have done it in, when was it, 91, 92? It's just crazy. Why would they sort of put all this pressure on them when they could have done it then? And also...
Well, let's get an answer to that first, Clive, yeah.
They could not do it in 91 because George Bush Sr. refused to go to Baghdad. And Cheney and others were very upset, and they expressed their anger throughout the 90s and formed this committee called the Project for the New American Century. They wrote letters to President Clinton urging him to go take over Iraq, saying we need this, told him to ignore international law, ignore the United Nations. So they were out of power for 8 years. They couldn't do it, and they're back in power 7-8 months, and 9/11 happens, and they've got the pretext to go. Some of them wanted to go immediately. Colin Powell argued we've got to do Afghanistan first. They had developed the plan to go into Afghanistan at least by July of 2001. I lay all this out in my first book, The New Pearl Harbor, and again in the second book, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. So this is well known. So they did it almost as quickly as they could. You know, they couldn't do it 2 days after the inauguration. That would have looked a little suspicious.
But then who's these guys in the cave on the Pakistani Afghan border who keep saying, we've done this, we've done that? Who are they at?
Well,
have you got another theory for that? You seem to have...
Hey, Clive, button it. You've asked the question. Let's get the answer.
Okay, sorry, James.
I should think
actually,
so.
Actually, Bin Laden shortly after 9/11 said he had nothing to do with it. Then they found magically this tape in Afghanistan, in which there's a fellow on there who has a beard, and that's about all he has in common with bin Laden, who says he did it. If you look at, if you go on Google, look under the fake bin Laden video, and you can see a picture of this guy next to the real bin Laden. You'll see this guy is much pudgier, much darker, much got a much broader nose. So they do all this flim-flam, and they're always putting out these things. This is, you know, very crucial nowadays, is this kind of psyop, psychological warfare. So don't be taken in by all this stuff.
Okay. James, can I just say one more thing?
One more thing.
Bush and Blair and all the other, right, no, more like, no, Bush. Bush has got Katrina wrong, he's blown up his deficit, he's gone into Iraq, he took all his troops out of Afghanistan, put them in Iraq, and now Afghanistan's going back down into total chaos. He's got everything wrong. Are you trying to tell me on a scale of this he would get this right? It's no way. The guy can't get nothing right.
If you were listening earlier, I already made that point, that surely it was not George W. Bush who made the plans for 9/11. Mm. He was not competent to do that. But Cheney was, Rumsfeld was.
Tim?
I mean, if you look at American public opinion at the moment, I mean, this American president is the most reviled American president in U.S. history. He is certainly the most reviled American president in world history. He's going to get his ass kicked come the congressional elections in November, and the Republicans are very, very worried that they're going to lose control of both the House of Representatives and Congress. And if that happens, you will see inquiries into the various actions of the Bush administration in the preceding 6 years.
If that does happen, do you think there will be any chance, David, that you will get the debate you want?
I really don't know. And so, again, I don't answer questions about what's going to happen in the future. There are just far too many contingencies. I don't know. All I know is that the official story is false.
Okay. Thanks very much indeed, Clive. Good questions. We'll take a break.
Get a grip on all the guts, grass, goals, and mud, sweat, and cheers on Football First.
The conspiracy, but not the silly conspiracies, which there are many, and which probably get more in the way than anything else, don't they, guys? This is a sort of well thought out, well documented case that you would like to go to court. You would like to actually get the chance to be cross questioned by the government and to be able to cross question them.
Oh, absolutely.
You won't get it, of course, but there we are.
If any member of the 9/11 Commission would debate me in public, I would welcome that. If we could get a special prosecutor. You know, what we need is to treat 9/11 like we treat the a robbery at the local grocery store. You know, you subpoena witnesses, you put people under lie detector tests. We did nothing of that sort with the biggest crime in American history. If we had a real investigation, the evidence is so overwhelming, it would be wrapped up very quickly.
I got a question. I mean, I don't know if there are any police officers out there, but a number of Britons died on 9/11. We've seen the police investigate crimes in other countries where British people have died. Why can't we see Scotland Yard investigate this crime?
Good point. Okay. A couple of emails before we go back to the calls. We're coming to Abdul in Peterborough in a moment. Matthew in Bethnal Green in London says, the cell phone calls on the plane that you said were impossible to make, how come the relatives confirmed that they were genuine?
Okay. This is very complicated, but I've just written a long article on this, which I believe is going to be posted tomorrow on 911truth.org, which is a response to Michael Bronner's piece that was published earlier this month in Vanity Fair. And the gist of it is that although we did not have the cell phone technology at that time, we did have the technology for voice morphing. And so you can take a recording, just a minute or two, of anybody's voice, and then you can create a device in which, in real time, you can make it sound like that person's voice. So you speak into this, you call the relative, and the relative will think it is her husband, her son, or whatever.
So you're saying, then, the conspiracy theory is, David, that they were using this technology to ring relatives of the people they knew were going to be killed and do this.
That's right. And in one case, we've got some internal evidence. In none of the cases do we have real long, you know, significant interaction. But in a few cases, a little interaction. But in one case, the person calls up Mark Bingham's mother and says, "Mom, this is Mark Bingham. Now, have any of us, no matter how much stress we're under, called up our mothers and used our last name?" And then you look at the rest of this cell phone call, and she says, "Well, you know, what's going on?" And he says, "Well, there are guys here, and they hijacked the plane." And she says, "Well, who are these guys?" And he says, "You believe me, don't you, Mom?" "Yes, Mark, I believe you, but who are those guys?" And the phone goes dead. So it sounded like a guy who just hit his head, hand to his head, and said, "Oh, geez, I really screwed up here." So when you look at these calls, and then you keep in mind the capacity for voice morphing, you see that all of these calls could be fabricated, and there's some internal evidence that some of them actually were.
Mm. Okay. Fred the cabbie emailed us before. He's emailed back. He says, "Sorry, mate, but before I was a cab driver, I was a mechanical engineer. I have an HNC in the subject." Well, lucky for you, Fred. "I don't know where they got their info from, but mild steel, like the type used in severely weakened at 1400 degrees. Google it, James, and see for yourself."
Well, first of all, this was not flimsy steel. One of the authors of contributors to the new volume, 9/11 American Empire Intellectuals Speak Out, is Kevin Ryan. He worked for Underwriters Laboratory, and he was fired because he wrote a letter reminding the people at Underwriters and at NIST that the steel had been certified well above anything that would have been required to withstand the fire and the pressure of that day.
Okay. Let's go back to the calls. Abdul is in Peterborough. Abdul, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello. Hello. I'd like to give my personal opinion. I do believe in the neocon theory, and I do believe that the American government knew what was going on. But what I don't believe is that they thought that they were going to attack the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. I think that they thought those planes would be hijacked and they could still use that episode for their ends as such. So that's why they're caught in a between two stools, because they are complicit, but they didn't realize that they're going to kill 2,000-3,000 people. They thought probably those planes would be hijacked, and the American public would be up in arms about it enough for them to go after the terrorists anyway. I mean, if you listen to these two people, it was the best Hollywood movie ever written, wouldn't it be? The voice morphing, planes disappearing, buildings dropping. It's just amazing.
Well, the movie's out at the moment, Abdul. You
right, fair
to,
enough. Yeah. That's my personal opinion, that the government knew what was going on, but they didn't think it was going to go into them planes. They just thought it was a normal hijacking. They'll deal with it and still get the neocon theory out into the open.
All right.
I have 2 points for why. What happened to the 1993?
Hang on, Abdul. Let's just get an answer. They want to answer that bit that you just made. Hold on.
That's a very interesting theory, but it doesn't fit the facts whatsoever. You've got to look at the whole picture here. The key to understanding this, you know, is go with the World Trade Center. Those buildings came down. Therefore, those buildings were wired in advance. This is a very precise art or science, the wiring of buildings to bring them straight down, basically, so that they don't fall over on other buildings. These 110-story buildings would have destroyed, you know, much of Lower Manhattan if they'd collapsed over. So they had to come straight down. This means the planes had to get through to be the pretext for the buildings coming down. So the idea that the hijackers were going to go off somewhere else does not fit the facts whatsoever.
Well, What happened to United 93, or is it 93? The one that hit Pennsylvania. Why did they get it wrong there?
We don't know. We don't know what happened there.
So everything else was perfect, yeah? These buildings going up.
Abdul, shut up and listen.
There are a lot of mysteries about Flight 93. There is very strong evidence that it was shot down. The 9/11 Commission simply ignored all that evidence, and they got around it by telling a whopper of a lie. Everybody knows that it was Cheney who gave the shoot down order. Now, all the previous information we had, say from Richard Clark, was that the shoot down order came about 9:50, in other words, about 13 minutes before Flight 93 was shot down. We have lots of other people in the military saying they knew about Flight 93, they were in position to shoot it down. Even Paul Wolfowitz said this. But now the news story that comes out from the 9/11 Commission and in this Vanity Fair piece is, oh no, we didn't even know that Flight 93 had been hijacked. They just completely changed everything that we know. And they claim that far from Cheney having been down in the underground bunker at 9:20, as Norman Mineta, Secretary of Transportation, testified, Cheney, he didn't get down there until almost 10 o'clock. They said probably 9:58. So when you see the enormous and obvious lies they tell, you see they're doing something to cover up. And one of the things they're covering up is the evidence that the order was given and that flight was shot down.
Abdul, thanks for that. Gary's in Glasgow. Gary, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good.
I've got a couple of questions for your guests, Dr. Griffin and Tim.
Come on, then.
The first one is really, if you can confirm or deny the rumour with the World Trade Center, was the World Trade Center, the rumour that's going about that the insurance policy had run out in that and wouldn't have been renewed after 2001. Is that true?
What we do know is that the insurance policy had been bought at virtually the last minute by Silverstein, and he made an enormous amount of money off of this. I believe Tim wants to get in.
Yeah, I mean, he actually tried to claim double his insurance money because both towers went down, and he wanted $14 billion, but he only got $7 billion because he's claimed that it was two separate terrorist attacks. And it does seem strange that a man should take out such an enormous insurance policy only a couple of months before the attack happened, but you know, who knows, perhaps he was a prophet.
And the insurance policy specifically included terrorist attacks.
Absolutely.
That would have been very difficult to get, I would have thought, but there we are.
There we are.
Yeah. Okay, Gary?
The other thing is, regards to the Iraq, was it not a case that Iraq and Afghanistan were selling their oil before 2000 in US dollars, and after year 2000 they started selling it in euro?
I mean, there are a lot of theories about buying and selling in dollars and euros, but what you should know, the Taliban and the Bush administration were very near to agreeing a deal to put a pipeline through Afghanistan to supply oil from the Caspian Sea through to the Americans, and it was because that the American government felt that they couldn't do business with the Taliban, and they said in July 2001, you know, either we give you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. That was what was laid out to them 2 months before 9/11 happened, and 4 months later, guess what? They invaded Afghanistan.
Okay, guys, can you stay around a bit longer?
Yeah.
Another
20 minutes or so?
Yeah, okay. 20 minutes.
Got a load of calls, so we'll come back and take some more calls in a moment. But it's just
they can't.
We've locked the doors. It's another conspiracy theory. 08704 2020. The lines are open. We will get to Paul in Glasgow, Grant in Newcastle, Stephen in North Yorkshire, Simon and Mary both in Romford, Dave in Aberdeen, and if we can squeeze a couple more in, we will. If you want to text me,
8:10:89, 9:10:53 a.m.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger.
Around the world.
The city of London.
Around the clock.
Yes or no?
From the Sky News Centre. Talk Sport on the Hour News.
The sob stories from the Sky News Centre at midnight.
Not that, you know, I'm not surprised. I don't want you to hear I'm surprised, but sometimes with some of these theories and some of these sort of things, you know, you do an hour and then it's time to move on to other subjects. And then, you know, some of them do another hour. But the only guest that has got the sort of response you get tonight is my very good friend Derek Acora, who comes on the show and speaks to dead people. And
when's he coming on again?
Well, he's coming on soon, actually. Yeah, Derek
is
coming.
What's the tingling?
I did notice some tingling.
Yeah, yeah, some tingling. Yeah, Derek actually.
I speak to dead people.
He's a medium, and he's the only medium in the world that or anybody. He always has something to tell you. Which I like. And he comes along with his spirit guide, Sam, who's a Red Indian. But you don't call them Red Indians anymore, do you?
I thought he was an Ethiopian, Sam, isn't he?
Oh, was he an Ethiopian? I thought he was a Red Indian.
I thought he was the reincarnation of Alan Partridge.
No, 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 absolutely not. Alan Partridge isn't a real person. You must know that. Right, okay, we're talking conspiracy theory. We've left the anniversary of 9/11 for another year. And I wonder if this time next year there will be a completely different complexion on that particular piece of history. My guest tonight, Tim Spark, who is the producer or... Executive producer. Okay.
No,
that means he basically nicked it off a couple of 22-year-olds and is now making a fortune out of it. That's not exactly how it went. Loose Change is available free on the internet.
Absolutely
free. It's being seen all over Europe and, well, everywhere except America and Britain at the moment on the television.
But if you write to the director of programmes at Channel 5...
No, but people don't do that. And then Channel 5 think it's me trying to get on the telly. Dr. David Ray Griffin has written a number of books. His latest book is called Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11, and we took. Did you want? That's your book. Did you want to look at your book?
You've
seen it before.
Yeah,
you?
It's a great book.
Yeah, it's a good book. Yeah, and he is one of a number of learned gentlemen who are now beginning to espouse the conspiracy. You would say that the conspiracy is on the other side, and that you were trying to get the truth out there.
Well, actually, they're both conspiracy theories, and so that's what you need to accept. It's a genus. There's a whole genus of conspiracy theories, and so they're on all fours. They're equal in that regard. So the question becomes not whether you're a conspiracy theorist or not. We're all conspiracy theorists. We all believe all sorts of conspiracies. The question is which one has the evidence to support it, and what we try to get across is that the official theory has no evidence to support it, evidence that will stand up. There's lots of planted evidence, a lot of fabricated evidence, but once you see through it, you see there is no evidence to support it, whereas there's an enormous amount of evidence that supports the alternative theory, which was that it was an inside job.
Okay. Let's go to the calls. Paul is in Glasgow. Hi, Paul.
Hi, James. How are we doing?
We're good. Paul, your question.
Okay, I've obviously been listening tonight to the this fantastic conspiracy theory. My problem with that is the American administration obviously is headed up by Mr. Bush, who's not the sharpest tool in the box.
Hang on, Paul. What is it? Poor old George Bush, because he doesn't pronounce his words very well, and he looks a little bit sort of shuffly. Everybody thinks he's stupid, but I mean, can you become the leader of the most powerful nation on the planet if you are as stupid as people think?
I think that's probably a question for another debate.
Yeah, okay. All right.
But no, the where my my problem with their ineptitude is, if you go back to when Mr. Bush was canvassing opinion for invading Iraq. If you looked at the argument, you have, you know, Saddam Hussein, who is unilaterally known as a fairly grade A bad guy. George Bush and his administration managed to allow the argument to focus on him rather than to focus on Saddam Hussein. So his administration is unable to put the spin that Tony Blair's government would have put on it, you know, to sell it to the people, how on earth can they be, you know, capable of pulling off this massive conspiracy theory that we're hearing tonight?
Well, you have to distinguish different aspects of it. If you look at what happened in Afghanistan and Iraq when it was a pure military operation, it was pulled off amazingly well, very efficient. Now, occupying a country is another matter. We're not good at that. Likewise, with regard to 9/11, some parts of it were pulled off brilliantly. Others, and I have a whole chapter on this in the New Pearl Harbor, there are lots of things. You just scratch your head and say, why would they do this? Why would they do that? So, you know, you can't have kind of a blanket thing here and say, well, they're really stupid and therefore they are incompetent and they couldn't have done this. You've got to look at the evidence, and when you do that, you can start to sort these things out.
Okay. Thanks for that, Paul. I was just looking at some pictures coming in from the Lebanon earlier, and the enormous demonstration against Blair, who went, I cannot believe, at least Bush hasn't done that, the ignorance of him going over there after what happened. And I find it incredible. He's there thousands, maybe 100,000 or so, who've been demonstrating against Blair, saying that he's not welcome there. He goes over to talk to the Lebanese government, who should have told him they didn't want him anyway, as far as I can see. And he swans in there. He's just laid a wreath on, I don't know who he laid the wreath on, but whether it was symbolic or not, I don't know. But I mean, he stayed on holiday during the whole of that slaughter of the Lebanese people and refused to say anything. We don't live in a democratic world, do we, anymore? I mean, we just don't.
Of course, my topic is not Tony Blair. My topic is 9/11, but there is a definite connection here. In the new book, 9/11 and American Empire, Intellectual Speak Out, a Canadian philosopher named John McMurtry has a most interesting piece called 9/11 and the 9/11 Wars. And that is language we need to get into the public discussion, that all of these wars that have come are 9/11 wars, obviously Afghanistan and Iraq, but also the war in Lebanon. These are justified on the basis of 9/11.
But I think most people realize that there was no reason for it. It seemed, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure pretty much most people, if you ask them, would feel this as well, that what happened because of a couple of people who'd been kidnapped, which happens quite regularly, and the rockets which fly back and forward, suddenly there was this all-out war before anybody knew what was going on. And it seemed it was really there to ignite the war with Iran, which didn't happen.
I think you're absolutely right. I think what they were trying to do by allowing the Israelis to go forward, they wanted them to get to Beirut. If the Israelis had managed to get to Beirut, then the Syrians more than likely would have had to have got involved. But they didn't, because Hezbollah, this renegade bunch of guerrillas, managed to defeat the might of the Israeli army, and this has never happened in history. The Israeli army is, you know, second to none, apparently. Well, you know, it didn't win. And
well, the worrying thing here, though, if you guys are to be believed, if the Americans don't get their way in all of this, then the next step is a limited nuclear strike, isn't it?
That is a real danger, and that's why, you know, when you ask about what will we be talking about a year from now, I very much hope that this is over. I didn't sign up to make the rest of my life devoted to exposing the truth about 9/11. I want to get it exposed very quickly, partly so I can get back to my own life, but also partly so that human civilization can get back to the issues that we really should be focusing on, and not these phony, fabricated wars. And the point I wanted to make with regard to how Lebanon fits in here, Wesley Clark revealed that he talked to a three-star general in the Pentagon who told him, we've got a hit list. And this hit list included most of the nations in the Middle East. So everybody had about the same five or six countries. And the only difference was the order in which we would go in. So they were really planning these 9/11 wars. They were going to pick off the whole Middle East of everybody that was not a friendly regime, and maybe a couple who were.
Whatever happened to the problems in South America that you lot had?
That?
Well, all the, you know, you were always going into America. I don't know why I'm asking you this. It's not your fault, David. I just suddenly... before all this sort of happened, America was continually involved in South American countries.
Oh, this
drugs
is
and,
a
you know.
Very good question. And it puts a way of looking at this, of what's happened, that we had this thing called the Monroe Doctrine. Of course, we made it up. We didn't ask anybody else. But the doctrine was... We have the right to interfere in Central and South America, and you Europeans don't. Therefore, stay out. And but that we could do anything we wanted to. We could overthrow governments if we didn't like it.
David, you must not refer to us as Europeans, please. It's offensive.
No, I meant all Europeans.
No, you're doing it again.
I understand.
The British and Europeans is okay. Yeah.
I understand, yes.
I mean, remember, but a lot of people here would think we are the 52nd state of whatever.
I'm speaking historically here, how the Monroe Doctrine was formulated, and when they formulated it, they said, you Europeans. So, this is a historical statement.
Yeah.
So, what has happened since then is that we have decided to apply the Monroe Doctrine to the whole world. And that, what we're talking about, there, another book that I and three other colleagues put out is called... American Empire and the Commonwealth of God, and we argue in there that from a political, economic, and religious point of view, that American Empire, first of all, it exists, and that the goal has been to make it the first all-inclusive empire in history. And this is very heady stuff. People who have a lust for power, what could be greater than say we're the ones who made the first borderless empire in history? And so the Monroe Doctrine that we used to apply only to South America, now we apply to the whole world.
Okay. The more you talk about these things, the more worrying it gets. And the more you think, I want to go away and just hide somewhere and live my life and not be involved, you can't, can you? We all think we can, but you can't.
Oh, Tim and I talked about this afternoon, and we feel, Tim used the word call, that we feel called to do this. This is something we can't not do.
Right. Yeah. And you're not making money out of it.
But not doing it, certainly not doing it for money. And, I've got a wife who I'd like to get back to. I'd like to see more of my family. This is something that... does become quite all-consuming, and I've tried very, very hard to disprove the points that we all make. I want to try and find the official story of 9/11.
Oh, I would love
to.
Yeah, I would love some people to come out and say, James, why do you keep interviewing these nuts? Because, they are completely nuts. That David Ray Griffin you had on the other night, he's barking, completely barking. And I would love somebody to come out and prove these things.
Absolutely.
And I'd be fine. Right, Grant in Newcastle. Hi, Grant, you're on the air.
Hi, James.
Yes, Grant.
I've been researching the subject for the last couple of years. Read numerous books. I've seen the Loose Change video. And for me, a lot of time is sort of wasted looking at whether there was explosives in the buildings, whether a plane hit the Pentagon, things like that. For me, the most conclusive piece of evidence that shows that there's a cover-up, especially as far as the 9/11 Commission was concerned, is the money which was wired to the lead hijacker, Mohammed Atta, it was ordered by the head of the Pakistani Intelligence Service. I mean, you guests are probably aware of this fact. For me, if that's true, and it was reported in the Times of India, and they said that it had been confirmed to them by the FBI, that blows the whole thing wide open, because it shows that behind the scenes,
there was links between intelligence services in Pakistan and the hijackers themselves, and that shows that the official story is nonsense. There's something else going on behind the scenes.
That's right, and you know, General Ahmed, the head of the ISI, had actually been in Washington the week before 9/11, meeting most of that time with George Tenet, the head of the CIA. And you know, right after that, the head of the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan was assassinated. So that looked peculiar. And
why did they do something so obvious in that case?
It didn't turn out to be obvious. You know, there's been no discussion that we orchestrated that attack. But the other suspicious thing was then that Washington went to great lengths to try to hide the fact that the head of the ISI had been there, which shows guilty conscience. So we know all of that. What we don't know is why, you know, what Otto was paid to do. You know, people refer to him as the ringleader. You know, to be more careful, we have to say the alleged ringleader. So the money was to him, but you're absolutely right, caller, that this shows that it was an inside job.
I mean, for me, obviously what it shows is that the official story isn't true, and if it had been confirmed by the FBI, if the FBI had that information, it's funny how it never made itself into the commission report. And in fact, at the start of the commission report, it actually said that they weren't going to investigate where the money had come from for the attacks, because it basically would be a fruitless exercise and would find nothing. So they didn't even bother to look where the funding had come from.
You're right, and
the fact that they actually said that proves that that's the place you should start looking.
This is incredible in a world where follow the money has become a cliche. We always know if you're looking, trying to unravel a crime, follow the money. And for the 9/11 Commission to say, oh, the question of where the money came from is irrelevant, like you say. And this is just one of literally dozens. In fact, I cited in my book on the 9/11 Commission 115 lies of commission and lies of omission. So what you mentioned is very important, but it is only one of well over 100 of these things.
I don't understand why the governments of America and Britain, but primarily America, do not do something to kind of shut all you guys up. I mean, surely they could do something. I mean, they've got everything at their disposal. They can bring as many. They could bring loads of eminent people, I'm sure, who would swear contrary things to what you're talking about.
Well, I don't know. I think they don't want to. All the evidence thus far is they do not want to get in any public debate about this whatsoever, because they know their story is so weak.
Mm.
And, of course, there would be other ways to shut us up, but those ways would, because we're well enough known now, those ways would just draw more attention to us. It would be highly suspicious.
Do you worry about safety?
No, because I do have a stock answer to that, that either they let me alone or they take me out. If they let me alone, I get to finally write my systematic theology and enjoy my old age. If they take me out, all my 9/11 books go to the top of the bestseller list, so it's a win-win situation.
Okay. Sorry, we're going to move on quickly because a load of calls. I know you want to go because Dave's got to be up early in the morning. Grant, thanks for that. Stephen's in Richmond in North Yorkshire, the sort of place every American should visit. I think they'd love that. Yes, Stephen.
Hello there.
Hi.
I'm just going to bring it back onto the 9/11 and the towers. I'd like your board members there to actually say how many people usually work in the towers on any one given day, and how many people actually turned up on 911, because there was a lot of information put out that a lot of influential people were called the morning and the night before the towers were taken down. So, I mean, that's my first question.
Okay, I mean, I can't answer that, you know, many people were called and various things like that, but what I can ask you to think about is the time at which the attacks took place. I mean, I think it was 8:56 was the first attack.
A little earlier than that, right? 8:46.
Now, the most if you were a terrorist and you wanted to cause maximum harm to the people of the United States, you would probably have landed your plane at about 11 o'clock in the morning, when all the stockbrokers and all the important people who would have been at work. The vast majority of people who died at the World Trade Center were low-level office workers, cleaners, various people like that. Now, there were some very important people who died in the floors where the planes hit. But if you were going to organize such a thing, you would choose a different time to attack the Twin Towers.
But didn't the time coincided with getting on major news stories or not around the world?
I don't think it would have made any difference what time you'd have done. I think you would be the major story of the day.
Yes, the question is a good one. It did seem like there were fewer people there than would have been normal. And then there are some very interesting stories about particular individuals, such as, I believe, Larry Silverstein has said, just luckily he had a dental appointment that day.
That was very lucky. Stephen, yeah.
The connection between George Bush, Skull and Bones, and Tony Blair and the Speculative Society from Scotland in England. These are basically the people behind the New World Order plan.
Skull and Bones we haven't spoken about tonight because I thought, I mean, I don't know, but this sort of shaking your willy at each other and all that sort of stuff to me, I mean, this Skull and Bones business, is this a bit of a red herring or not?
I've had people send me books and let me know that I really needed to study this. I just haven't done it yet, so I really can't say whether there's anything important there or not.
No.
You see, where I come from, it's very Masonic, the control of just of the councils and things like that. And this thing is, with the house prices in England, the things are turning into a state of control where the simplest of things in people's life, like a house, has to be the most expensive object in your life. I'd like to have to work hard to buy a Ferrari.
Stephen, what is the point you're trying to make? Are you all over here?
Well, basically about, George Bush and the Skull and Bones and, what should be fear of the Freemasons.
Well, I leave that for another program, thank you. Simon in Romford, you're on the air. Hi, Simon.
Yeah, hiya. Just a couple of questions. First one is, I think it's easier to prove about the Twin Towers falling in a demolition type of way. But surely you should go for the easiest one and all, and I can't believe the American people bought it. The Pentagon. How can they honestly say a plane hit that building when you've seen the film that they've shown out a video or some from a camera, a hidden camera or whatever. Now, I don't see any plane hitting there, and I don't know if this is any fact or not, but as the explosion comes up, there's a large red flume of flame, and I read in a book of some time that indicates a missile hitting a building.
Yeah, the evidence regarding the Pentagon and what hit there, it's very contradictory, and the truth might be that several things happened, and Barbara Honegger has just put out a study in the new edition of Jim Marr's book, Inside Job, and she has a lot of inside information. She's involved with the military people, not that she's military herself. But she points out that many of the clocks and watches stopped about 9:32 that morning. And it would appear that there was a bomb that went off then, sometime before whatever aircraft hit. So there is evidence, like you say, that suggests it was a missile. There's other evidence that suggests that a small airplane, Golden Hawk or something like that, hit. And again, I don't think the most fruitful thing for us to do is sitting out here with the very little of information that we have, speculating about what really happened. But the point that you make is the important one, that it could not have been a Boeing 757. Okay. And certainly it couldn't have been Flight 77 under the control of Hani Hanjour, who could hardly fly a tiny little airplane.
Simon, thanks for that, mate, because I think David is beginning to drop off here, and I'm going to let him go. Maybe you'll come and join us another night on the show when you're back in this country next time. Just before you go,
pleasure.
Robin Buckinghamshire emailed me, and he said, such a conspiracy would surely require hundreds, maybe thousands of engineers, demolition experts, and various professionals who would presumably know the truth. Does your guest, Tim, know of any cases of people who have claimed to have been involved in the demolition of the towers?
We've had nobody yet claim. What we have had is people who worked at the World Trade Center talk about a security stand down. They talked about the bomb-sniffing dogs being taking off the job. So there does seem to be the opportunity for explosives to have been placed within the World Trade Center prior to 9/11. As I said, what we're about is not proving so much that we are that we have an alternative theory. It's just we're saying to people, look at the evidence, look at all of this evidence, and then judge for yourself. I mean, if you watch Loose Change, everyone's got their favourite bit, if you like, and we've seen from the callers tonight, someone talks about the Pentagon, someone talks about the money, someone talks about the explosives. The point is that the sum total of all this information leads anyone who watches the film with this nagging doubt in their stomach, in their heart, and in their head that we have been lied to. And because we have been lied to, and now that we are fighting a war against the Muslim world, you know, frankly, it's time that we held these guys to account. And we, as voters, taxpayers, all the rest of it, have got to start asking some questions. So go to your police station, ask them to investigate 9/11. Go to your bookies, ask them to give you the odds on 9/11. Start asking questions, because that's the only way you're going to get any answers.
And go to the website and have a look at Tim's film, which is called Loose Change. Where can you find out?
Loosechange911.com.
And you can get it for free.
For free.
Okay. David, thank you very much indeed. I know you stayed a lot longer than you were going to. Your book, which is published by...
This book is published by Westminster John Knox Press. The other books are published by Interlink.
Now...
And in this country, Eris Books.
What do you think is going to be the next step? Do you think there's going to be a war called in Iran? And if there is a war in Iran, we're running out of soldiers and people to go. Some people are saying that conscription, you call it the draft, may be reintroduced. Do you think it will be?
As I say, I don't talk about the future. I have no idea what will happen.
Okay. If suddenly, because I think we're being softened up in this country to be led into another war, and I think one of the reasons, and I might be just making up my own conspiracy theory here, I think one of the main reasons Tony Blair hasn't stepped down is because he can't step down until George Bush says... he can go, and if they're planning an attack on another country at the moment, he doesn't want to be involved in talking to another prime minister of the country. And it looks, doesn't it, as if it is on the cards, and sooner rather than later.
But if there is a war, to some extent they have to have some popular support, and this government has lost all credibility. It lied to us about Iraq. We know they lied to us about Iraq, and they know that we know that they lied to us about Iraq.
But before
Iraq.
They go into Iran, they're going to make, or, you know, Blair will be on the TV, I presume, saying, this is why we're going, we have to go, it is for the safety of everybody.
James, you know, if your girlfriend is unfaithful to you once, and you catch her doing it, and then she's unfaithful to you twice, and you catch her doing it, are you going to believe her the third time?
Well, some of us have a kink in that way, but that's another story. Okay, thank you very much indeed, Tim. Thanks very much indeed, David. I'm going to leave on that thought. We'll come back. We'll take loads more calls about the conspiracy of 9/11. I know that Mike Allen, who'll be here after 1 o'clock tonight, is going to be talking about it as well. Thank you, guys, very much indeed.
Thank you very much for your attention to this most important issue.
Thanks very much, James.